let's welcome our co-host Adam to the show.
Thank you very much. I can very much feel my, like, as soon as you said the co-host and it got all kind of serious, so let's say, I was like, oh my god, I've got to do this now. And it's like immediately my nerves went up and I was like, oh, bloody hell, my heart rate's doing it. But your laughing makes me feel quite a lot better. So, but that's like, good. Actually, it's kind of a good thing, because what we've just done is an example of the vulnerability catch. Yeah, well, I'll come on to that later on as well. But the vulnerability catch ring is essentially, I just confess, like, I was just honest about how I felt. And so I felt vulnerable. And what, by you like laughing and kind of, you know, agreeing in it, recognizing that, and you caught me, and it made me feel comfortable. And my nerves are very much reduced already. Aww, so yes. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. So let's begin this week's episode. Welcome to this week's episode, where I am super excited and also really honoured, to be fair, because we've got Adam as our co-host on this episode, and he has said, yes, I would love to be your co-host, Nick. Just tell me what I need to be doing to be a co-host. So I've just briefly explained this. So this is literally a brand new way for Adam within this talk that we're going to have today. So I'm going to let him take the reins. He's going to be the leader of this episode. I'm just going to jump in when I need to for the listeners' sakes and stuff. But other than that, let's welcome our co-host Adam to the show.
Thank you very much. I can very much feel my, like, as soon as you said the co-host and it got all kind of serious, so let's say, I was like, oh my god, I've got to do this now. And it's like immediately my nerves went up and I was like, oh, bloody hell, my heart rate's doing it. But your laughing makes me feel quite a lot better. So but that's like, good. Actually, it's kind of a good thing, because what we've just done is an example of the vulnerability catch scenario. Okay. The ring, okay, that I've talked about before. Yeah, well, I'll come on to that later on as well. But the vulnerability catch ring is essentially, I just confess, like, I was just honest about how I felt, and so I felt vulnerable. And what, by you like laughing and kind of, you know, agreeing in it, recognizing that, and you caught me, and it made me feel comfortable. And my nerves are very much reduced already. Aww, so yes. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome
for doing that. And I suppose to give the listeners a kind of preview of what I'm going to talk about. This session is, because this is like the third episode we've done, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Is it reasonable to assume that someone listening to this third episode would have listened to one and two, so they'll have know what Plight Club's about and yes, I'm about and stuff?
Right. Yes. Because we've got a lot of followers now, and people that have subscribed. And also, you're, just to let the listeners know, that you've been on every season. And I check my stats, like the behind the scenes numbers. Yeah. And your episodes are just flying high, like literally. I won't even put a number on it, because there's, I would say, 100 plus number now downloads on just your episodes only. So that you're actually, Plight Club is getting out there. And just for the listeners that don't know, that are new to this episode, Adam is the founder of Plight Club, and I'm going to hand it back over to you.
Right, yeah, so Plight Club exists to inspire human connection. And the way we do that is through community, which is clothing, which is connection clothing and event. And the profits from that go to support coaching or connection coaching for those in need. That's essentially the essence of Plight Club. And check it out if you want more information on plightclub.co.uk. It's all on there. Right. So when I started out Plight Club, it was basically because I was angry. Can I swear on here? Because I was about to.
Yeah, of course you can. You're sure episode. So do what you want.
Fair enough, because I was about to say anxious as fuck. And
carry on.
But that's how I, like, kind of how I speak. But I had moments of really bad anxiety, in short. And so through the Plight Club is kind of, it's an evolution. It's kind of a movement that I want, and I went on this journey, and it's still evolving. I don't really know where it's going to go necessarily, but, and its current guise, that's what it is. It's this clothing and coaching and stuff like that. So, but throughout my experimentation and rough and recently, as I said, I've recently met someone and, you know, we're now boyfriend and girlfriend, which is very nice.
Congratulations.
And it's been like, it's very beautiful 3 months. And she's also a coach as well. And so, you know, there's no hiding when you're dating a coach.
No.
So we've done a lot of, been very vulnerable with each other and held space for each other and all the coach lingo. But through that, I realized something that I don't know if the listeners have heard of Brené. Obviously, Brené Brown is a very famous person really within vulnerability. She's got a talk called The Power of Vulnerability, which is a brilliant, brilliant TED talk on YouTube, which I fully, fully recommend anyone listening to. And I listened to it a long time ago, and it was very much influenced my courage with regards to facing up to my vulnerability, i.e. just pushing through it. And the term is also by another, there's a famous book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by a lady, Susan Jeffers, I think. But anyway, that in a nutshell, the power of vulnerability is incredibly powerful. Yeah. But what I, through experimentation, what I've come to realize is, and the talk that I'm going to do is called The Purpose of Vulnerability, which is a play on, obviously, Brené Brown's work, but it's arguably a bit of an extension of it.
Yeah.
And what comes next. And there's a short way I can say this story, but I think is the longer way is more entertaining for one, I think. Mm-hmm. But also there's the nuances within the longer story that are that make this theory stand up.
Yeah.
Arguably. But so my theory is kind of, as I said, through experimentation, I've managed to stumble upon what I believe is an evolutionary step.
Oh.
Which is, well, it's like that, and it's like go big or go home, right? But that's like, that's a pretty big thing to say. But it seems to make sense. And so as I tell this story, the answer question is to you and to the listeners. Does it make sense? Because it's like, it is a theory. And with all good theories, this one starts with a girl.
Okay.
or rather me meeting a girl on a train in, 5 years ago, I think 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that relationship I'll cut very short and say, when I first saw her on the train, I was besotted by it. Like, I was just like, we chatted for about 2 hours. When she left, I could feel my face was aching kind of thing. And I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing. Ah. This is what kind of thing. I was like, oh my God, I was a bit, blown away by it. But anyway, her and I dated for 6 months. And when I say the things I'm about to say, they're so obvious red flags that we shouldn't have gotten started dating. And there's no, we're still friends. There's no judgment or anything based on this, but there was some things that came up that was just like, no, she's not ready for dating yet. Mm-hmm. Which were, she was still living with her ex at the time. Mm-hmm. And they've not dated. They've not been together for a month, but also very, very sadly for her ex had before that one had killed himself during their relationship or at the end of their relationship.
Oh, God.
So you can imagine, that is a horrific thing to happen to anyone, very traumatic event. And she hadn't processed it. And I only found that out because I was like for me, all these flags were there and I was besotted. I just couldn't not proceed with her. And I was like, there was a kind of like addicted to her kind of way. I don't know how to phrase that. But but when it came to about 6 months into our relationship where we could get a bit more serious, she just bailed overnight and she just said, no, I can't do this. And it was my first episode rather of dealing with self-sabotage. I'd never even known that as a term before this point. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what was happening then. And I was just smashed. I was just broken basically.
Yeah.
But it kind of made sense when 2 weeks later, she sent me a message saying, oh, these are all the things that make you awesome. Mm-hmm. And I was like, thank you. But like, it's, I was like, he sounds like a guy that you should keep. but it made sense because obviously it seemed like that she was, protecting herself from getting me. This is my, basic psychology. She was protecting herself from getting people getting close to her and behavioral happened and she self-sabotaged. So off the back of her, like I wasn't ready to meet anyone. But like everyone in the modern society seems to do is because also because of dating apps a little bit is that, got out there too quickly. like, you know, got back into dating, thinking the right way out of this is to get back on the horse kind of thing. And I can categorically say that is not the right way to meet someone new. Because I was not ready to meet someone new. I didn't know, like, my head was ready, but my body was just not ready in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. And this is when I wrote the article, which is on the Plight Girl blog, which is about the rangover, which is a relationship hangover. So a rangover being like after the girl that I call her train girl, let's say, I don't want to put names into it, but train girl. Yeah. After her, I was in a rangover, which means I wasn't emotionally ready to meet anyone, but it takes to become emotionally ready just takes time.
Yeah.
Nothing you can do really apart from, you know, if you can really feel the feelings, but a classic thing that men do, but all people do it, is I suppress the emotions. I was sad as F about this scenario, but classic thing is like, oh, we've only been dating for 6 months, so I'm going to get on with, you know, get on with life and do all these things.
Yeah.
And so I suppressed this sadness, which I didn't even realize what was going on. Anyway, so fortunately for me, unfortunately at the same time, I met another person about 4 months later, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And we actually met through Bumble dating app. Or a dating app. Don't want to plug any dating apps, but a dating app, let's say. Nothing against dating apps. I think they're great. I actually think they're great for the human race in the sense that they mix peoples from different circles and all those kind of things. I just think they can be used at the wrong time. And I was, you know, victim to using them at the wrong time because they just enable to meet people too easily in that context.
Yeah.
And so this girl I met, and there was definitely something between us. But for some reason, and I'd never had this before, when I got really vulnerable, not really vulnerable, really be anxious at certain points. And I was just started picking fault with her, not verbally, but in my head. And I was like, obviously there's something wrong here. Felt really anxious. And so a couple of times I ended the relationship. And so that's an example of the vulnerability, no catch, because I didn't enable her to catch me. Like, because I didn't tell her about it. I just kind of, again, suppressed what I was thinking and feeling, pushed it down. And so her and I, like, she's an amazing human being, and we are still friends again. But we, like, for the course of a year, we went apart and we came back together and went apart and came back together. And it was all, initially, it was all me doing the going apart bit. But we just seemingly couldn't, you know, we'd hang out as friends and it was impossible for both of us to be friends, essentially, to put it politely. But then, so eventually we got together properly. So 6 months into the relationship, we got together properly. And then for 6 months, we were together and it was great. Like, but at the time, I was going through therapy and coaching. And one of the things was to work with my anxiety, was to try and whenever I felt anxious, do more of the thing that made me feel anxious. And one of the things for me was controlling things, like, and trying to control, even though I wasn't a control freak, as the term is used. I don't think that freak is the right word, but it is a normal term. I was in that situation. So her and I tried an open relationship, right? And so I don't know if you've tried an open relationship or what, but they are...
I'm quite old school.
Yeah. So, which is fair enough. Like, it's like, I don't want an open relationship anymore. I'm very pleased I tried one. I'm all for opening my relationship to having a third coming in, that kind of, or that kind of thing, but not without my partner there.
Sure.
But we tried it and we didn't, nothing really happened, but we did go out independently and with the agreement that if we met someone that night, we could both do whatever we wanted, that kind of thing. And if you want something to test your anxiety and level of, holy shit, that is like going through the mill.
Another level.
Jesus Christ. But yes, and it was a great growing experience for both of us. But it was, yeah, it was intense. And so she ended up living with me for about a month because she was going back to South Africa, where she's from, for also in about 6 weeks. And during those 6 weeks, she was going to be working. And then I was going to meet her for 2 weeks at the end and I was going to come back. Right. So that's kind of important. So I didn't say that then, but, and this was at the new year of 20, it was end of the year 2019 going into, no, it wasn't. It was 2018 going into 2019. Mm-hmm. So about 2 years ago. And so what happened just before she left was she told me that she had sent her, and we were all being open and honest, she told me she'd sent her ex an email about 5 months or just in the gap, in one of our gaps, and said how much she made a mistake and she missed him and blah, blah, blah. But 5 months later, she kind of said she'd worked through this. It became apparent that she hadn't. Like she said she thought she had, but emotionally she was in a hangover in exactly the same way I was. And then when she went to South Africa, there was lots of disturbance in her life, and she met up with him, not on purpose, like she was at a festival, he was there, and they ended up sleeping together because she was reaching out for comfort in that kind of way. And it blew me apart to say, like, I just got to that point where I had opened up, properly vulnerable. Arguably, my hangover was over.
Yeah.
And I was emotionally open and available, and she just essentially hit me with a baseball bat, and it just blew me to smithereens. And that was the beginning of Plight Club, essentially.
Yeah.
So I thank her in a way for doing that. But it was about 4 months of permanent anxiety. And the initial month of January, well, it was from January. I know the date very well. It was on January 19th when it happened. And so for about 3 or 4 weeks after that, I was held in a state of anxiety. I didn't sleep for, I didn't sleep. I slept. It was about 10 days where I slept for 2 hours a night. I lost a stone in weight. I turned gray.
Wow.
It was my version of hell, arguably.
Yeah.
But because of that, I was like, something has to change here. Like I don't want to live my life within the fear of this. And this is where my therapy then, or my coaching then ramped up. And I was like, started to recognize some things, realize how the body works in relation to the vulnerability catch cycle. Like with anxiety, it's generally, not all the time, but generally, and this is talking about when you have bad anxiety, not general day-to-day anxiety, but because that's just normal, and it's not going to hamper you living life. But really bad anxiety is often means that you've got an emotion that you're not allowing yourself to feel, in short. And what happens because of that is you end up with a distrust of your intuition and arguably your instincts. So you've disconnected your head and your body. And that's in like basic terms, that's what's happened. We only have a head and body. It's connected, but we create this boundary, and we don't trust our instincts anymore. And so when something kicks off like that, and it's often because it's completely subconscious, and that's the annoying thing about it, is that our subconsciouses are ruling our lives. I'm reading a book recently by a guy called Ken Wilber. And if like people are like, I won't bang on about Ken Wilber, but he's awesome. And he, the page I just read actually on the weekend was that if you imagine a human as a blob, just, it doesn't matter what it is, but a blob is made up of 100%. When a traumatic event happens throughout your life, and often it's, they happen when you're a kid, and those are the major ones that cause anxiety, a bit of you gets cut off. So the blob remit goes from, so when a traumatic event happens, say when you're 3 years old, 10% of your blob remains at that level of development, and 90% of you carries on. But then throughout your life, you'll have other events that cause trauma. And so you'll get to the point where you have the 60% of yourself remaining in the current thing, and the rest of you is in the past. If you're with me on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what happens when it comes to certain developmental levels, that it's not levels in the sense of a hierarchy, because we dip in and out of them, but it's progression in one's life, is that sometimes in order to get to the next stage, you need say seven to be at least 70, 80% of your whole. But if you've had bits chopped off of you, and you're only at 60%, you're never, regardless of what you do, all the therapy, those things, you're never going to get to be able to break free of those things until you've brought you've leveled the old stuff up to where you are now. And that happens by doing breath work, doing spiritual things, doing other therapies, obviously, of course, talking about stuff mainly and getting out. But in short, processing the emotion somehow, which happened at that. So if your fear of one of mine that happened when I was 14, I got abandoned by my friends overnight, kind of thing. And so completely unknowingly, that developed for me a fear of abandonment, which I had no idea until 2 years ago what that was and why that was happening. I had another one where I got into a fight when I was 17, I think, and he hit me first, to be fair, but then I locked 3 minutes, and the next thing I heard was, get him off him before he kills him. And I just had lost control completely. And I, you know, that guy actually stayed at my house that night, as guys, boys will be boys, but I beat him up quite badly, knocked him out. There was things. But for 20 years, I never got angry, and I had no idea that I didn't got angry. And so with my coach and my therapist, through the coaching that I currently do, I cried out this emotion that happened 20 years ago. And that is such a strange experience to happen. So anyway, so what happened was she blew me apart. I was broken. This is SA girl. This is mid 2019. And that is where my journey of experimentation with vulnerability began. And this is where I created Plight Club. And that came about, long story short, was because I tried going to a men's circle, or starting one. And I noticed that the energy in the room when no one knew each other was a bit frosty. Not negative, it was just no one knew each other, so no one was talking. But as soon as everyone opened up and started talking vulnerably, the energy in the room changed. And I had no idea what it was, but I felt it in my body. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but the world needs more of it. And that was the birth of Plight Club. Mm-hmm. And so since that point, I now know what that is. Know that, you know, the energy of moving through one's body, however you want to phrase whatever that energy is, you can use energy, God, love, anything, but it's the flow of how we are moving through the universe, if you want to go really that big, because we are ultimately just particles floating through space. And I'm not going to go too hippie about this, but contact me if anyone wants to wax lyrical about these things.
Can I just stop you there for a minute, Adam? Just saying that, actually, that's pretty out there, the sort of stuff I do as well. So trust me, it might be a bit too heavy for the listeners, that sort of the particles, we are just that. I'm on that dimension with you as well. That's another dimension.
but actually, so to say it's another dimension is like, that is interesting, because quantum physics and spirituality on that agree. Mm-hmm. So whichever, if you're a rational human being in that sense, if you think science is rational and then spirituality is irrational, they agree with each other. And you can read lots of philosophers, you can read lots of scientists on that. There's a lot of information and data to say that they're essentially the same thing. And I was, you know, before my change, let's say, or the waking up of becoming a bit more spiritual, I would have said, I'm a rational human being, you're talking shit. And I'm like, well, I've done research, I've experimented with it, and it's like, it's not, it's true. So but that's my opinion. Find out for yourself and see what happens. Would be my
I digressed you there, Adam. You carry on. I got you off the little trail for a little bit.
Oh, no, it's all right. No, no problem. So it's a good test this for my being able to tell this story. But so where are we? I met a girl on a train, started a hangover, wasn't emotionally whole, met someone else, became emotionally whole. She hit me with a baseball bat unknowingly. I don't blame her, but I suppressed immediately after that. I realized that I suppressed my anger again towards what happened. And I also didn't talk properly about it. I was like, I'm okay. And in my head, I was okay, but I definitely wasn't. And so through that, started the men's group, noticed the energy change in the world. Noticed that the world needs more of that energy. And then I did things like yoga, or started yoga, dancing, talking, then that kind of thing, and nothing too out there. But what I started witnessing, and this is where it was energy movement. And so knowing what anxiety is like, and there's no such thing as a good or bad feeling. There is just feeling. And that's where humans have to put things in boxes. And this is where my research into control comes into play. It's like one of the things we don't feel comfortable when there's gray area. Like, so there's a book called The Wisdom of Insecurity, but it's very much when you can feel secure by being, when insecure is that is where the fuel of life arguably is, like passion, purpose, all the beautiful stuff. But also at exactly the same time, there is all this deep, deep sadness and all that kind of, and that stuff, because the goal of life isn't to be happy, it's to feel. Like the human experience is about feeling.
Yeah.
And so by the nature of opening up, if you want to feel joy and happiness, you have to enable yourself to feel sadness. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there is no other way around that. And the quote again in Ken Wilber's book is, if you want to, you have to make friends with Freud before you can access Buddha, something like that. But okay. It's like working with your body, understanding. So it's called growing down before you can grow up, arguably, or transcend, or have a life that is driven by feeling and purpose and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was the point I got to. And then I again did the same thing. And this is on my journey of investigation. I went to a thing called Morning Gloryville, which is a dance practice where, well, not dance practice, it's just a morning rave. But the major thing about it is it's sober. You don't have any alcohol at all or anything else. And so for me, I've danced under most conditions, let's say, but sober is often not one. It wasn't one before. And there's a vulnerability. It's an easier way. Like, if you, the listeners, ask yourself the question now, is like, dancing, just starting dancing without any form of lubricant is like, a lot of people are like, oh no, can't do that. So we have a couple of drinks, which is nothing wrong with that. Have a couple of drinks. It enables you to have a bit more courage, and then you get on the dance floor. When you're on the dance floor, you stop drinking for a bit anyway, because you just don't really care anymore. But the part of testing one's vulnerability and exercising it and stretching that muscle by going to something like Morning Gloryville or Ecstatic Dance, which is another one. So shout out to Ecstatic Dance UK, who's a friend of mine. Here, try it because it's amazing. But it's a meditative practice. It's a bit more spiritual than Morning Gloryville, say, but they essentially do the similar thing. You can feel the emotions of what's happening. You feel the music and you dance, and you just dance how you want to dance. How do you feel to dance?
Nice. That sounds good.
Yeah. And there's no, because what alcohol, I realized, do, I drink very occasionally now, but I realized that alcohol for me was very much we think it's a lubricant, but it's actually, it numbs us. And I found it didn't serve me anymore. So I was like, I don't really see the point in drinking anymore, in all honesty, apart from beer tastes lovely and wine tastes lovely in that context, and as does rum, this is one of my favorite things, but I'll happily have one and sip it now, rather than, it was never my goal to get drunk, but it was a byproduct of enjoying the liquid and the situation. I'd just sit and drink until however now I don't feel I want to do that anymore, because it just cuts me. It feels like it distances me from people, as opposed to the opposite, which I thought it would do. Anyway, that's a different story. So where are you? So trying these things, and I met a person, and she was lovely. And to her credit at the time, let's call her Westbourne Park. I met her there, and she called it and said, you're not ready for a relationship. But as we were living close to each other at the time, we liked the physicalness of it, and we got into a bit of a relationship, and it shouldn't have ever happened because I wasn't ready. And then the same thing happened, of the kind of pushing of her away, which I did. And then this is over the course of 2 years. A few months later, I met somebody else, physical practice again, got into that. And it was just like, again, her and I were never, it was never a commitment thing. It was just kind of an on and off again thing. And it was just suited us both. But then both of us got to the point, it was like, we're either going to go deeper here or we're not. And and we're not. And so we didn't. And it was at that point, I was like, forget this. I am not going to try and meet I'm actively going to try and not meet anyone and just concentrate on myself and just do stuff that I love doing. And follow the energy, you know, of meeting people and that kind of thing, but actively try and not, you know, put the feelers out to like go and bend all the dating apps, did all that kind of stuff. And that roughly was at the end of about September last year, I think, maybe. And so this is all, and so during this time, obviously Plight Club's building, daily practice of pushing my vulnerability and facing up to my anxieties and that kind of thing, getting to know myself better, becoming more attuned to my body, in my body, to the point now that like it's kind of works as a radar. Like I can tell when someone's not telling the truth kind of thing, because I can feel it, which is a very bizarre statement to a person, you know, even as I say it, to a person that doesn't know, has no idea what I'm on about. That is a very weird concept. But there's a lot of stuff going on scientifically that I wasn't aware of, but the feeling in one's body, you can tell, like you can just feel a room. A lot of people, including myself, used to numb the bottom, heart, like neck down, with alcohol. I was never an alcoholic, but I would numb it and that kind of thing. If I felt an emotion coming up, a big one, like my thing was exercise, I would numb it through exercise. And so, and it always made the feeling go away, like, and that's great, but it never, it was a sticking plaster. So there's, you can be addicted to food, alcohol, exercise, anything, but if you're doing it to not feel something, that is a flag, let's say.
That
would be a way of doing it. And I wasn't in it. And it takes, you know, quite often, if you're dealing with your subconscious, you'll have no idea what's going on. Right. So that's why the beauty of therapy and coaching is amazing, because it's like having someone guiding you and holding a mirror up, and they've been there before and can arguably help you in that way. So that's my the practice that I do is connection coaching. And the long and short of it is I've using what I've learned on my journey, I've created a practice and a set of coaching techniques that enable one to connect their head to their body again, in short. And it brings a lot of feeling back into one's life. And a net in it, because once you understand the vulnerability catch mechanism and can embody it, the rest is up to you. Like, you can use that throughout your life. It's like, I don't know for sure whether it's the root of a lot of problems, but for me it was. And so I can, I think now with this practice, I can help a lot of other people. So that's where the Profits Apply Club go to, not just me. There's, there are other people that do integral coaching, which is the common term for it. And so the idea being the clothes pay for people to do that if they need it, or at least a percentage of the cost of it. And that's, so that's where the, a nice ring happens, where it's kind of like everyone in the world wearing Plight Club is doing good. That's the long short. And so, right, let's catch me up to where I'm. So, yeah, so I'm currently in that stage, not wanting to meet anyone, do all these things. And I went to a friend's conscious dinner party. And this, which was like, I've never been to a dinner party in my life where I've not had a glass of wine or before this one. And it was great. Like, it was fine. But it was a new thing, me doing the experimentation, do all these things. And at that point, I met my now girlfriend for the first time. But both her and I were just like, yeah, he's fit, she's fit, but nothing. There was no real connection. We just chatted and that was that. Didn't think anything of it. And then I was like, okay, sure. And turns out that she was the guy that was there, she was dating him at that point in time, and I didn't know. And that may be why I didn't feel anything. But then 3 or 4 months after that, if I got my timings right, it was around mid-December last year, she and I went to his birthday party. Even though, you know, well, we did, even though it was totally socially distanced, there was no more than 6 people there, just to caveat that, for sure. Just to be clear on that, it was that everyone was 2 meters apart, for sure. But we were at this, so we were at this party, and we ended up, her and I, just going out for dinner together. And the reason that happened was because we were both hungry, and we asked everyone else that was there, do you want to go and get some food? And no, everyone's like, nah, we're right. And so her and I went out for dinner. And then, so we got chatting, and it turns out we got loads, you know, loads in common. As I said, both coaches, both reading philosophy books and interested in that, psychology, love dancing, et cetera, et cetera. And a myriad of other things. Again, when we got up to leave, we were like, yeah, cool, she'd be a nice friend and that thing. And then when we hugged goodbye, my heart literally went, boom, like something hit me, like I had a jolt in my heart, and like I kind of stumbled. I was like, when she left, I was like, what? What was that? Because it was a very, very peculiar feeling, which I've never had before. And I was like, that's strange. There was, but what I've now recognized with this through the vulnerability capturing is enabled my body to be. There was a saying in a film called Wonder, which I don't. Have you seen the film Wonder?
No.
Like, oh. It's an amazing film about, it sounds really sad, but it's not. It's about a boy that's got facial deformities, and how he and all of his family are affected by his misfortune, I suppose, at the beginning. But it becomes very beautiful. It's a beautiful story, and it made me cry. It was lovely. It's beautiful, absolutely amazing. But in that, Julia Roberts says, this is the map, like the heart is the direct, giving you direction, a map of where to go. And the face is kind of the map of where you've been, kind of thing. Obviously, as you get older, you get more wrinkles and all that jazz. Well, you don't, it seems, but everyone else on the planet does. But so in that, like I was very much following at the time, following the energy in my heart, this direction that I'd managed. And it only came, this ability to be able to do that has only come through 2 years of practice, trial and error, doing all these things and just witnessing what's going on. But the major thing being is noticing this when vulnerability or anxiety happens, it's just energy moving and making peace with that, arguably, and then being able to govern the energy in relation to that. And so I was like, okay. So, but then I realized I had her number from the previous WhatsApp group from the dinner party. And then I found myself looking at her picture a bit too much, arguably a bit in a bit of a creepy way, arguably a bit too. I was trying to find ways that I would accidentally bump into her, in air quotes. Mm-hmm. And so we both go to a thing called Ecstatic Dance. I went there and I didn't know she was going. And then she turned up and she was late and I turned around and she was there. And I felt this, whoa, this big thing in my, and I was like, okay, that's interesting. And then I tried to kind of manipulate the situation so she could end up giving me a lift home, which she did. And it wasn't just me either. It was other people she gave a lift home, but it was ended up with just me in the car. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that she had exactly the same feeling. But what I did in the car was I just said to her, and I was very, very much about being honest and authentic. And there was no weight when I said this, and there was no kind of pressure or anything. I just said, oh, by the way, like just to say, like last time, I don't really know what's behind it, but last time we were, when we went for that dinner, like when we hugged goodbye, I had this massive feeling in my heart, and I was like, it was great, and it was great, and I just wanted to share that with you, which is quite. If I think back to 3 years ago, this is something I would never have just, you know, like ballsly said, like, okay, that's that, and it was what's going on for me, and it didn't at the time because I was certainly not trying to meet anyone. I was like, I don't really care whether that anything comes of that at all. It's just like I was just actively trying to not, in fact. But then so that was mid-December time, and then from that we ended up spending New Year's together, socially distant, of course, and we ended up spending 4 days together after that point. And it was just like, okay, there was something interesting there. And then from that point forward we've been we've been dating ever since, kind of once, because I work 6 days a week, as does she.
Oh, wait, this is your now girlfriend?
This is where I am. We're now.
Oh, like, my God, this is so exciting.
I've just given you a journey of two or three years. So, hopefully your listeners are with the story. But the recap was, I had it like from halfway, pretty much, I had a really big emotional anxiety bout for a long period of time, created Polite Club, started experimenting, met with lots, tried lots of different things. There was a few people, and I'm still friends with all of them, and there was a connection with all of them, which I'm honored to have experienced.
That's amazing.
And they are beautiful, the beautiful, beautiful creatures. It wasn't our time. Is the only way to describe it.
Sure.
And from both sides as well. It wasn't just me. So learn those things, and then got to the point now where I can, you know, really feel this mechanism going on in my body and witness it. And then met her energy in that context. And we felt a connection. I just followed it and I was just like, sure. And we hung out. And then when there's a thing now that you can tell when you kiss someone for the first time, that kind of thing. And it was like, it was a proper, I've had.
Oh, I love this, Adam. Stop. So nice. It's just so gushy and love it. I love it. I love that when you actually do feel that total, just the electricity between two people, you just know, don't you? You just think, is this the one? You know, like you don't ever question it. Is this the one? It's, is this the one? You know?
Yeah, and I think that I've also, like, I don't think I will ever be able now be, this is the societal pressure, arguably, to have a traditional relationship, which I find annoying, actually, and because it's a total lot of horseshit.
Yeah.
And it causes people a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Particularly women, when they get to a certain age, and they're like, well, I haven't had kids yet, so fuck anxiety, shit, this is bollocks. Ah, my life's crap. Oh, my God, why haven't I got a man? I need kids and all that kind of thing. There's many things, like, not wrong. I don't want to say wrong, but to be worked on if a person's feeling that like attachment to a hell of a lot of things, but it's not necessarily and very often nothing to do with the person. It's society is that is the normal route of things, which it's the perception of the normal route of things, but the actual normal route of things for an individual is almost infinite possibilities. Some people have kids, some people don't, some people get hit by trucks, some people don't. It's just chaotic. It's complete. And so when I let go of the thing of like, okay, if I have, like, I would like children, and I added on the sentence at the end of it, if my life unfolds that way. Sure. Like, and that for me though, that was a game changing ability to be able to say, you can either, it's a growth mindset or a fixed mindset. So you could attach. So the other, a quick way of doing that is to say like, say I'm not very good at tennis, but if you just stick the word yet on the end of that, you change, you over time you change the way your culture within your body to be one that you can expand and grow, as opposed to fixed.
I literally can totally understand and relate to that, because for an example of like back in my age group, like my generation, you know, it was very much you met someone, you married them, you had children, you had to buy your own home. There was like a set of, like, it was just like a process that my generation, a lot of my, of the people of my generation, it was just sort of, it was just, that was how it was, you know, that was how you did it.
There's nothing wrong with, there's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely. It just happens for the majority, like it quite often happens for the majority of people, but it does call.
But you know what though, Adam, I have noticed though now in this generation, like this day and age, it's not like that anymore. And I don't suppose it was back then either for me, like in my generation, but it was more sort of highlighted more back then. Whereas nowadays, everybody, you know, like you asked me earlier on about, you know, open relationships, and I said, no, I'm old school. But that doesn't mean that I wouldn't, it is something that it's just not for me, but I wouldn't say, you know, good luck to everybody else sort of thing, you know. But again, it's, there's all these things that are happening around us. And absolutely.
With regards to like open relationships and polyamory and various different types, like they all serve their purpose, and for some people, each their own, all that stuff. There is quite a lot of science to suggest though that men and women, men and men, whatever, women and women, doesn't matter, but we are programmed in a way to be monogamous. It's not really our nature to be like generically nature. So if you said 90% of the population to be the average in that context, those is a monogamous thing. There's always outliers. So for some people that just doesn't fit, totally fine. And that's how it is. But for the majority of people, a monogamous relationship is the thing where they will feel emotionally safe and stable. And the whole thing about, you know, going through love and the is animal emotions is one of the goals in life is balance. It's not, it's the way you feel emotionally secure is the right thing. So when you're happy, you're not emotionally secure. And when you're sad, you're not emotionally secure. You're unstable at both poles. And so with it, and there's a book by Sue Johnson about the secret science of love and relationships, I think it is. And in that she gives a very, very good case to with regards to monogamy and connection and that thing. And so Brené Brown also in her work later on, Braving the Wilderness, as an example, about the desire for human connection is one thing. And it's, and the, one of the major things that humans have is the desire to be truly seen. Like as they are. And the only way to be truly seen is to go warts out. You know, I am in no way, shape or form a perfect human being, although I don't think there's such a thing, but it's by nature of witnessing and being authentic about your imperfections that arguably makes you perfect in an, you know, if you can see that you're just, this, the human experience is all about imperfections. It's like we fuck up all the time. And it's, but it's about embracing those and being in a situation where you can go, okay, fuck, sorry. I made a mistake. But if it's also if you make a mistake, firstly, witness that you make a mistake. And then if you make a mistake, correct the mistake, or do everything you can to correct the mistake. And if you can't do it, once you've tried to do those things, then the last bit is let it go. Like you've done your best. Because the rest of it is the other person's responsibility after that point. But you've got to, well, I had to practice all that stuff and start to witness those things. So anyway, right. So that story about meeting somebody. It's very important story because it leaves the build up to this point about evolution.
Yes.
And so the purpose of vulnerability is, the theory is this.
Okay.
That, so when I am single and when I'm in a relationship, to be honest, prior to this one, is that, and I think a lot of men have this situation, and I'm going to be using generalized terms, but I'm aware that one shouldn't really speak in that way, but in this context it needs to be said for brevity, is although I can't it will take ages to go around the houses on that, but the majority of men unknowingly, and myself included unknowingly, and I'm going to use the word fuck on purpose, because we want to meet someone, we fuck, and we have an emotion, we have a release at the end, and at that point we are emotionally vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we all, and that, going back to the point, we want to be seen as our base desire. Like, men want to do that, and unknowingly or not, they always like, nah, fuck off, nah, that's not me. But it's actually, that is one of the things, one of the reasons why men, you know, want to, you know, they have sex and the goal is to ejaculate, and you, for a moment, whether you just fall asleep immediately after, you are serene and calm and do all those things, and that's where you can be emotionally vulnerable, because we aren't emotionally vulnerable, generally, generalized term, in our day-to-day, we seek that out more. And I'm not absolving responsibility for any men that are cheating on whoever it might be, because that's just a dick move, and that's nothing to do with what I'm saying. This is part of the evolutionary thing. It's like, so what I noticed within myself was that the more I was open and talked about how I was feeling, the less desire I had for non-intimate sex. Just, even though I do like playing that role, don't get me wrong, that's fun, and it's very different approach to it, as to the point where I wanted to have, like, whether it's masturbation or sex or whatever, to have that release and find that calm. And that's what I found now, is that by talking about how I'm feeling, I don't need that release as much.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, and also one thing I realized when there's a guy called Chris Bale, I think his name is. And he's like, there's loads of stuff on YouTube about what he talks about. He talks about polarity between men and women. It gets a bit complicated, but I won't go too much into it. But one of the things he said was, which I've now realized, is that when a person gets horny, it's not that they've got too much sexual energy. It's because they're deficient in sexual energy, which, until you've tried it, it doesn't make sense. But once you've tried it, it does. And so, but as I said, the nature of, when I started talking about my feelings more, my desire for masturbation dropped. And this, and so I would, my cycle, arguably over the course of a week or so, you can feel it building up, this horniness. You get close to full of sexual energy, let's say, and that's where you feel really horny, and you're like, okay. And then it plateaus out. And then so you're not so horny anymore. So with my partner, we practice non-release sex, and it's a different ball game altogether. Like, and it takes a lot of practice, and it's not easy. And I'm not going to wax on about it too much. But for any man out there or any couple out there, investigate into it. It is amazing. It's not easy to do, but it also requires a person to be able to feel in their body. I mean, if you can't feel your body, you boil over too quickly. Believe me, I've had a lot of embarrassing moments where, like, a classic thing for a guy is, you know, if you come quickly, you're not a real man and all that shit. And it's like, okay, but I've had some embarrassing moments where it's like, oh fuck, sorry. but I'm with a partner where, you know, obviously, you know, we're practicing this thing, and so it happens, and it's literally. For all the men out there, they already know this. It is like a hair trigger. Like, you get to a point, but you do get to a point where you just hit it, and it's like, there's nothing you can do. Like, if a herd of elephants came in at that exact moment, you would still continue coming, and it's just So that's what it's like for guys. Guys have this constant thing where we're, you know, when we're in bed with someone, we're trying to, we're not completely present, because we're trying to long out sex. Like, we're trying not to come, in short.
Of course.
Yeah. And obviously, once we feel like we've done our job and we've been there for long enough, and men out there, she's had her enjoyment. So any man out there that's not satisfying their partner in that way stop being selfish because you're ruining it for all of us.
Sure.
True. You know, having sex in a non-release way in that way, yeah, being vulnerable with each other and being open and honest enabled us to have a connection, which is beautiful. Like, it's a very spiritual, open, loving thing. And this is where the whole thing of the purpose of vulnerability comes into play is, and this is worth from a statement that she made, and it was just off the cuff. It wasn't like it was like a big run up to it or anything.
Yeah.
And we were just chatting and she was just like, okay, I can't, but she was like, I can't go back.
Okay.
And I was like, what? And then she kind of, well, I've had relationships before, and obviously I was I hadn't been vulnerable with them as much as they had been vulnerable with me. But there's no, and having now experienced what a vulnerable relationship or a conscious relationship, as they're called, which is a bit of a wanky term, but it is what it is. She says that I can't go back to a normal relationship where one, either I or the other person, aren't in some way practicing facing up to their internal mechanism and the way it's working.
Okay.
So that's, and also in that book, which I've, The Brief History of Everything, Ken Wilber, there's a point in it which, roughly to that blob thing that I mentioned, which is talking about where societal evolution, and this is where when I wrote the list to you, I said I, we, and it.
Yeah.
In that book, there's, and that's how it lit that also, and this is complete by accident, I didn't know, I created Plight Club for real change, and it was individual change, so I, societal change, which is we, and then economic change or business change, which is it. But it's like, so it links to what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And it was complete accident. I had no idea. But the way, in order for, to see life as the it bit, if you only see life as the it bit, you only see the surface of it, and it's like there is a lot of depth, which I won't go into, it's huge, but by not having a connection between your head and your body, which is you aren't the full I, arguably, and that those that know anything about philosophy or anything will be like, well, there is no I and all that shit, which is true, but like I'm not going to go into that now. But in order to be this, and this is where the vulnerability catch ring comes in. It's like, if you're vulnerable and can catch your and trust your instincts to catch yourself in any situation, you are, let's say your mechanism is working as it should.
Yeah.
And that's like, if you think of, we are just animals, arguably, but we are chimps that can think or monkeys that can think. If you look to a cat or a dog or a tree or whatever, they are just doing their thing. Like an acorn has everything in it that to create the specific oak that it creates.
Yeah.
Nothing, there's, you know, and that's arguably, there's lots of books that say that humans have a similar kind of trajectory, but this direction of that I'm referring to enables people to, you know, if you're getting anxious about something or excited about something, it's one's labeled bad, one labeled good, but neither are good or bad. They're just feelings. It's just direction to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the thing of, like if you're fearing something, we tend to run away from it. But the whole point of Plight Club is that you go to it and you rebel against it, or you rebel through it. And that's the point. And so she said in the same breath, she's like, I can't go back. And I was like, okay, actually, neither can I. And so through that whole long story, if you think me witnessing, so arguably there's some kind of saving grace to anyone that suffers from anxiety really badly, you're being slapped in the face to say, listen here, listen to this, face into this thing. And when you do, lots of change and beautiful change will happen in your life. It may completely fuck up your life in the sense of mess it all up because you throw the piece of the puzzle up in the air. But that's where the attachment, when you're talking about philosophy, comes in.
Yeah.
Trying to be not attached to a situation. It's very difficult if you've got a house, wife, husband, kids, and all those things. And I'm not saying abandon your kids here, obviously, because that would always be a loving environment. But if they're in a situation where you're, you know, in a relationship where you're not communicating and arguably the parents are unhappy, you're not doing the kids any favors. You're, because they can feel it. They can feel the energy of the negative energy between the two things. If they separate and they still have a connection to raise the kids, beautiful.
Yeah.
And then they can find partners that are, that they work with, and the kids will be, I believe, in a much happier environment.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry. She said, I can't go back. And that is how the the when it comes to the power of vulnerability, enables you to work through and witness this vulnerability catch mechanism. And when you are confident in yourself of doing that, you're more likely to reach out to somebody else and be vulnerable with them, which I was with my current partner and friends and family, of course, and all that stuff. Yeah. And they catch you. And if by the nature of embracing that and embodying that, that is the net, if a woman and a man in this context have noticed it and can't go back, by the nature of doing that, it implies it's an evolutionary step. There's no ego saying I'm better or worse than anyone. It's just the nature of doing that. The more, and then in this Ken Wilber book, he talks about the centauric level of, and when you have, you know, what the mythic animals where you've got like a half human, it's half human, half horse.
Yeah.
Think of that as the same way. Until we connect those two things and become a centaur, that is the next step of, in order to. But if we can then do that from an evolutionary purposes, and everyone's communicating more properly, the knock-on effect of that throughout the world is that people will start communicating properly. There will be less fear in the world, less borders of countries, less creed, all those kind of things. And then we'll hopefully be able to talk seriously about how we have fucked up the planet and what we're doing in that way.
Yeah.
And if you've seen Seaspiracy as an example, like that highlights, and the same as Cowspiracy, and I'm not promoting any form of eating, just eat intuitively. Mm-hmm. But we do need to eat less meat, and we do need to eat less fish if we are to rescue the planet. Mm-hmm. And everyone has to, at some point, has to step up. And that's it. You've made the saying, you made your bed, you got to lie in it. We made our bed. We might not have made that bed, but some in the past up to this point made the bed. We have to deal with the consequences. Yeah. And that's where it is. But if everyone can speak openly and honestly and not react to their own bodies and their own emotions within that, then they can actually have an open and honest and productive conversation rather than just talking about shit and doing nothing. So that's where it stems back to the whole point of Plight Club and the real world change element of it, which I kind of think I've stumbled upon rather than through a series of experiments. Is that if you see someone wearing a Plight Club t-shirt, that is kind of what they represent, or a hat or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's what the representation is. So the more people can wear Plight Club in that context, the more people can get coached. And the more people that can get coached can sort that out, the more likely to be vulnerable. And that massive thing it's the snowball effect may occur. It, as I said, just a theory, but it seems to be backed up by evidence a bit. But that's where, I guess, you mentioned that there'll be another part to this story. And to be honest, I have no idea what's going to be in that part. But like this one, I didn't have any idea what I was going to talk about when you emailed me the last time. So, watch this space, and just because I'm doing a talk on it, I aim to do a TED talk on it and various different things. And if any of the listeners, as I said, want to get in touch, Plight Club HQ on Instagram. And it is just me at this point in time. I'm looking for to develop it further. And so, funding in that way, and who knows. So in 6 months to a year's time, however long we there is a break, things will be different. I have no idea where they'll be, but they definitely will be. That's the purpose of vulnerability and how it's linked to evolution, I think.
Absolutely amazing, amazing, amazing. You're a great co-host. You do know that, right? Very good.
It's my first time.
There you go. See, it's just chatting. That's all it is. Just to let the listeners know as well that obviously all of Adam's contact details will be in the show notes. And did you say you're actually going to be doing a TED talk?
Well, I haven't said that. Well, I've put the flag in the ground for me to aim at. I haven't done any of the stuff that you need to do to do it yet.
Sure.
But I want to do one. As the same thing of this practicing vulnerability, it makes me nervous as hell, the thought of doing it, but I can't now. Amazing. I've changed my culture, so it's like, well, I'm going to do it because I think that it's scary, so I'm going to go and do it.
Amazing.
But with that also urges me on, because on the Plight Club HQ, you know, I'm not very great at Instagram, in all honesty, but you can have highlights. And what I plan to do in there is take pictures of books. And so you'll have the book. And I'll do the same thing. And just to make that a resource library.
Because you've got some great, every time you're always on, you're always sort of reading a lot of really interesting books. And I feel that, it's helped you along your journey, which is a great recommendation for our listeners, you know, and you know, let's be honest, they'll most probably want a little bit more of an encouragement with something to read as well for their journeys.
If we've got any questions in that of where to start and stuff like that, do at the moment, because it's not on Instagram, but message me on Instagram and I'll happily answer that thing. One of the things to add to that is to finally to close, I suppose, and I'm not prescribing this in any way, shape or form, and whatever happens happens, but I've just started recently taking lion's mane mushroom, which is very legal to do, but to discover the power of and investigate into mushrooms, there's a film called Fantastic Fungi, I think it is. I would urge everyone to watch that, and because mushrooms are intrinsically linked to the planet and how amazing it is. But the reason I'm saying that is because having taken lion's mane, my ability to process information has got better. Like my reading ability has got better. It's very weird, but it did for me anyway, and I can only do it on my experiment of one, and there's no that is a legal disclaimer if I need one. I don't think I do, because it's it is what it is. But it's available on Amazon or anything, but try it out, get a good quality one though.
And
it's wonderful stuff, like it was just interesting, so that's
that. Love that. I love it. You always drop stuff in to the conversation, and you sort of sometimes you take me aback a little bit. I'm like, oh wow, this is Adam. This is what this is him. This is who you are, and that's why I absolutely adore you. And I cannot wait for you to come on again for another episode with us. Again, you know, sort of a lead on. Because you've got so much more to talk about within this topic that we talked about today anyway. So I feel that definitely come on another co-host episode.
For sure, like season four for you I guess.
Absolutely, it will be. So if you want to say goodbye to the listeners today, Adam.
Thank you everyone for listening to me waffle. Hopefully it was of service to you guys, and as I said, if you've got any questions, I'm open all ears. I would be honored for anyone that is moved by this to join the club, because we can only start a movement. Well, I'm trying to start a movement, I guess, and a movement starts with one step from a lot of people. So I need more people, please help. That's it.
Brilliant. That's great. Okay. Well, look, everyone that's been listening today, I really, really hope that you've took some sort of real inspiration from Adam's journey, as well as maybe you've related it, you know, it's been relatable for your journey also, some of the parts that he's been talking about today. But definitely you'll be hearing from him again. So until next time, lovely listeners, love and light. I do hope you have gained some further insight into this episode today and now have some takeaway positivity. I thank you for your time. Before we go, show some love for your favourite podcast by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. Please do share the podcast with your friends and family or anyone you know that could benefit from these episodes. You can listen to your favourite episodes on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, my podcast website, which is www.thenicolapaulapproach.com. Stay tuned for next Monday morning's episode with another guest appearance. Love and light.